Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 55. We have the illustrious, the punctual, the pontificating Eric Taylor, and our always, always wise and just full of awesome insight, Kirk Pettis, and I am Matt Winterer. And today we come to you with no plan whatsoever.
Yep, it's been a couple months, right? Kirk, we did one a few months ago. It's been quite a while, quite a bit longer for you, since you've been on, Matt, right? How long has it been?
Yeah, hiatus. I think you and I did one back in, I don't even know. It was like 3 months ago, 4 months ago now?
Yeah, I think it's been quite some time. We've selected a good time to do this, right? Smack dab in the middle of the presidential debate that we're not hearing, I don't think. Is anybody
riveted.
Sad about that? Is that a bad thing or a good thing or?
Dude, I'm so upset.
Yeah.
I can't. I'm so upset. I'm missing the debate.
You
know, just between the shit sandwich and the giant douche. You know, I just can't. Inconsolable, guys. I'm inconsolable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you guys been tracking it at all? Kirk, I did listen to a little bit of No Agenda on my run this evening, and they certainly are of the opinion that they're using pretty much Hillary's using every strategy possible to derail that campaign, and they still seem to, and I think you said this last time, they still seem to think that Trump has a legitimate chance of winning. Even though you look at polls and, you know, more and more of the polls kind of indicate that it's slipping away, and you read articles and, you know, it seems like I haven't really seen outside of real right-wing leaning publications, you know, it seems like the race is pretty much called for Clinton, and they're basically suggesting that's not the
case. I think that's desperation.
Yeah.
I'm glad you can hear me now, I take it, right? Because...
Yes.
I cut out again earlier, but the plug-in worked again. So
did you unplug your mic and plug it back in?
Yes, but...
good. You got the system down. Whenever that happens, unplug.
Quick learner.
Yeah.
It's quite a contrast, but I still stick by my prediction that Trump's going to run away with this election, but...
Yeah,
I've tried to keep my emotions at bay because I really dislike Hillary, but I still think that the broader populace is going to end up voting for Trump when it's all said and done.
That'd be an amazing surprise, you know, with all the rhetoric that's out there, you know, claiming it's going to be rigged, and you know. It almost sounds like at times from what I've seen that Trump he's insinuated that he's going to challenge the legitimacy of the election if he loses. Right. And.
I guess I haven't heard that, but it wouldn't surprise me.
I've certainly seen that.
Well, especially with all this Project Veritas stuff coming out. It's
do tell. I don't know a lot about the Project Veritas.
You haven't seen the new, it just came out this week. I just watched it last night. It blew my mind.
I heard a little bit about it, and I can pull up a clip, too, while you're talking about it, see if I can find kind of a condensed clip of Veritas. But
yeah, but what is this Veritas news that you're talking about?
Yeah, give us a skinny.
Apparently, I've only watched one. Apparently, like, he's come out with something every day.
Okay, I see it a little bit.
I didn't see the one that where the he has it undercover how they've been hiring people to go and instigate violence at Trump rallies.
Didn't they say that there's a guy who was like at the White House like 300 times and he was one of the people inciting the violence?
Yeah, that was a headline. I never read the article, but yeah, there's that. And then they got all these people on camera talking about rigging, you know, busting people around, setting up voter fraud, and it's pretty eye-opening, the blatancy of it all and the forwardness, you know, it is undercover, but it's you know, we've always talked about this, you know, and to actually have proof in it is another story. And to see it, it's always been the speculation that this always goes on. And that's why it's probably ends up being true. And this kind of proves it.
I have a clip. It's under 2 minutes. And so I'm doing a little research. I actually watched a little bit of this last night on YouTube. James O'Keefe is kind of the political operative that Trump is utilizing. He's a Breitbart guy. Used to be a Goldman Sachs guy. Who's kind of unmasking a lot of this. So I'm going to roll this clip. We'll kill it if it's useless. I haven't looked at anything. We have nothing for this show. Maybe it'll be the best ever. That's how things seem to work out. So let me roll this and we'll listen a little bit.
So I'm basically deputy rapid response director for the DNC for all things Trump on the ground. So the Chicago protest, when they shut all that was us. It was more him than me, but none of this is supposed to come back to us because we want it coming from people. We don't want it to come from the party.
I mean, I know things that, like, make big impacts. I think of, like, that, like, I think it was, like, a woman, older woman who was, like, attacked at a Trump rally. Like, things like that really show what kind of people.
Hey, Lauren.
Yeah.
So we get people behind Trump when he's at a rally, but we make sure it's women and they're positioned next to men. We want images of the men bullying the women who are trying to hold their signs up. That's what I'm going to do. That is what we're going to do. That is the hit.
How do you think you're going to do it?
They're going to have to show up 7 hours ahead of time and wait in line to get there early.
So, like, pretend to be Trump supporters so they get sat behind them?
Then fold up those signs that we have and put them in their pockets.
That is the hit.
That is the hit. Yeah, so that's kind of... It's coming back to me now. Project Veritas is basically exposing what the DNC and Hillary campaign has done as far as planting belligerent people and protesters at various Trump rallies and inciting violence for the purpose of inciting violence. That's what you're referring to, Kirk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's this whole election. It's just so eye-opening to so many things that. I can see how Clinton sat down and, you know, should have been an easy candidate. I mean, she was run like she was the incumbent. No challengers. They ran Bernie, in my opinion, just to promote socialism within Democratic Party to move that needle a little more towards the socialist angle. And then... And then he's, you know, obviously, I believe, just told that, you know what, you did what you needed to do and paid off. And I know he wasn't happy. He obviously isn't happy about it, but I think deep down he knows that he ended up moved his cause forward, even though I don't think he likes Hillary at all. But for all the people that could have ran and challenged, you know, to run to be the nominee, it's pretty surprising that Hillary's just was seated instantly into it and how it is all staged or all stacked up to have Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the DNC. And, but anyways, so strategy wise, I always look at it that if you're going to, you have these weaknesses, how do you deflect and get, you know, change the public's persona of you. The Clinton methodology has always been attack your attackers with what you're going to be attacked with. And that's why they've constantly have done the violence, just one scandal after another. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's kind of also read.
Well, I guess to finish my point, it would be that the scandals that she, the Democrats, always push forward against Donald Trump and the Republican Party, it's like 10 times worse on the Democrat side. And I'm not arguing either way, because it's just, to me, it's a circus these days, both parties. And but it's just so blatantly out there that I just don't see how people don't perceive this either. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seemed like, and I'm sure you probably came across this as well, Kirk, that Trump was one of the candidates that Hillary kind of identified as the most desirable. I read an article that she absolutely did not want Rand Paul and some other candidates to make it into to be the nominee, and viewed Trump as kind of one of the easier ones to beat. And may or may not be the case. It's interesting, and I'm sure you've heard about this, that it kind of sounds like if Trump loses, he's going to form a news network of some sort, right? Have you heard this at all?
I kind of been hearing a few things about it, but I've never looked into it.
Yeah, that's kind of the Breitbart guy who's responsible for the Veritas report, who is now pretty influential on his campaign, is, you know, potentially gonna be one of the guys that he works with to put that together.
What do you think that means, though? I mean, to me, I don't really see why he would, but
yeah, I don't know. It seems like it would be a pretty niche. Maybe it's larger than a niche audience. One of the things, and you know, I think Kirk, you and I, and Matt, maybe you've observed this as well. Kirk, you and I especially talked about this. One of the things that, through the bluster, there are more nuggets of truth that you hear coming out. I mean, you obviously hear a ton of lies from Trump in general. It's just outright fabrication and lies. But he does bring some truth to power. He does. It seems like he does actually touch on things that are systematically wrong with the state, things like war with Russia, perpetual meddling in the Middle East, talking about the Federal Reserve, talking about how Washington D.C. is full of corrupt politicians, and how they're now on Twitter. If you look at his recent tweets, he uses hashtag drain the swamp. He's very belligerent towards the establishment on both the Republican side as well as the liberal side, and has been outright ostracized, as you saw by the establishment just basically falling away, peeling, especially after the Billy Bush tapes came out, which NBC has had for over a year, and they decided to drop, just basically after the WikiLeaks expose was done just a lot of Clinton dealings and her chief of staff. But he does bring a certain authentic probing into what's wrong with government, and I think that's what would what would be behind that network, and almost just a citizen journalist or investigative journalist type of slant.
Yeah, I think Trump's going to find a follow up with a big following, I think, because I think a lot of people are pretty fed up with how our government's being operated.
I think that's been the case for a really long time, though.
Yeah, and that's why.
Anything for this election.
But that's why Donald Trump's the changed candidate, so that's why I believe that he has, the ability to make a pretty big difference and win this election, because I think that's exactly why Obama won originally. So it'll,
calling it for change. One of the things that really bugs me about it is that we're talking about a candidate who was a Democrat just a few years ago.
Right.
And he's, so now he's a Republican and yelling about borders and stuff, and I mean, I understand that during the swamp thing, but it really all just sounds disingenuous to me. That sounds, you know, he had a TV show where he told people they were fired, a reality TV show. The guy, like, he's an actor.
Yes.
So he's up there putting on a show, and he may not, even if he does get elected, he might not do anything like what he's saying he's going to do right now. He could do exactly what Obama did, talk a whole lot and then do nothing to back up what you said you were going to do.
Well, that's exactly what I think will happen. I mean, you can't change a state. I that's why I don't believe a president, it doesn't matter who's president. I believe a corrupt president is bad, yes, but I don't think the system is going to change at all. But the people, the populace of the country want it. The populace of our country really wants change and to fix things. But the deep state, Leviathan, just Washington, D.C. itself is set up to always grow in the way it's growing. And I think big changes are going to happen in the future just because it's the nature of the system of the world that is America's probably coming to an end. Just because of how the system and the banking system set up and our monetary, and it's just going to have to, we're just being set up to fail, in my opinion. So
do you think, I've been wondering this, and this is totally random, but kind of on the same line. Do you think that banking systems would intentionally set up the U.S. to fail because there's too many people getting into a position where they can actively question the people who are running things? They're too comfortable. So if they can change it, make them less comfortable, they'd be less apt to question the ruling party, or so to speak.
Well, there's something to be said to that, to just let the ruling party be in control and let them, you know, they just want to be at the top. However it happens, so be it. The majority of us will live in bliss, self-delusional bliss. But I think that's what we've been experiencing for the last few decades. But there's plenty of swings in that, but None of it makes sense. None of it's reality. I don't know if you guys listen to DH Unplugged. I wish I could remember about it, but he was talking about, John C. Dvorak was talking about how all come 2018, all cities need to have in their published budgets and stuff, financial reports, the pension liabilities that each city has. And all of these things are unfundable. The system of our government is so unsustainable that it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's all funded through municipal bonds that, you know, the excess.
Yep.
And they're all AAA rated, low interest rates. And so you know, they're all graded out as being as about as good of debt as you can get. And they can keep,
And that's about to burst.
Yeah, it's a pandemic issue because there really aren't, I mean, you can look around, there really aren't many municipal entities getting furthest down, local, the most local city governments that are in the black, almost all in the red and almost all bond things. So they, you know, push debt down. I'm sure you guys have had intimate exposure to that when you're running for Chanhassen City Council. You see a lot of public projects.
I learned more about that. It was horrible. You're absolutely right. It was all around, and it was kind of one of those things where we got, I don't know if Kirk had the same experience as me, but I got pulled into a room with two guys who had super long-term knowledge about the corruption that was happening at the local level as far as bonding tons and tons of projects that were not going on the ballot, that used to go on the ballot. And they basically said, look, we know this is all going on. We're going to help you stop this if you can help us do some other stuff.
Right.
So it was, you know, you scratch our back, we'll scratch yours kind of situation. And I ended up learning about so much stuff that city was doing. It was ridiculous.
All off the books, not transparent. Well, it's on the books, but it's not. You have to dig a little bit, right? Joe Sixpack isn't going to be aware.
Well, the bonding is there that you can dig into, but the pension plans, you really can't see. They're not forced to be on the books.
Right.
So
right.
People have no idea how bankrupt all of our cities are, that we're paying for all these employees and all these brand new buildings are from the bonding that's going on in government everywhere. All government buildings are brand new. Look at every fire station you drive by now. Man, it's just immaculate.
Debt. That's all debt-based, right? You know, these 10, 20, 30-year bonds that they sell off, municipal bonds that they sell off with AAA ratings and are sold at 2% or whatever under the, you know, under the bond market. Yeah, so it makes it easy.
But
it easy for them to do that.
That's how America runs, though. It has to be this way. It's how we create, it's how our money supply expands.
In a gut,
and,
yep.
And it doesn't have to be this way, but that's how it's been entrenched this way. And we're so rutted in that we can't steer our car out of the rut. And we're on a shoulder to the disaster in a sense. But I always, you know, it's always bleak to look into, but there's always a way that it's patched up.
Yeah.
And the patch is just a diversion and squirrel.
There you go.
You know, it's just look over here. And as long as the public just buys into it, it's really not a problem. But it really is a problem long term. But and that's where I always have this conflicting nature in myself, that it's so much easier just to buy into the system and blissfully go along. And that to know about it, the realities of it, it's tough to deal with, because you can't do anything to change it. It's just how it is. But that's why it's depressing yet exhilarating. And, you know, it's the kind of stuff that we all like to know about.
Yeah, it's good to know about. And maybe if you have enough people who are aware of it, you can start thinking of solutions to the problem, right? I mean, you can identify it, but it's also good to think about how can we fix this, and that's a tough question. I do have a clip as far as the deep state. It's around. I listen to the Liberty Report, Ron Paul's Liberty Report, almost daily when it comes out during the week. He's doing a better and better job with that. But this is a clip, if you guys want to listen to it, that kind of goes over the deep state and his opinion on it. Good to roll it, or should we keep talking?
I'm just going to tune out for it, but yeah, go ahead and play it.
You're going to tune out? Like,
I want to hear it.
No interest? Okay.
I'm kidding.
Would you vote for Donald Trump if he wins the nomination?
No, I wouldn't vote for him, because I see him as a very, very strong authoritarian. If he were strong in defending free market economics and sound monetary policy and cutting spending and not massively increasing the military spending and threatening people and wanting tariffs and blaming everybody, it's the Mexicans' fault, it's the Chinese' fault. Maybe it's the fault of some of our policies. And that's what we should be doing.
So,
I think he's misdirecting the people where we should be looking for the answer.
If it's between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, will you cast a vote?
I'll cast a vote, but not for either one of them. I've never bought into this idea that the lesser of two evils is a good idea. And,
so who would you vote for?
I would vote on principle and make my vote count. Probably vote for a libertarian, an independent candidate, but somebody that's trying to point out that there's no difference between these. As long as I've been watching politics for a long, long time, whether you have Republicans or Democrats, they're always controlled by this coalition in the deep state, the special interest, the powerful special interest. And whether it's a Ronald Reagan or
Trump?
An Obama, they still are controlled.
Okay, let me ask you this. The former House Speaker John Boehner, he called Ted Cruz Lucifer in the flesh. You worked with John Boehner. Should he have said that?
No, I don't think so. I think it's terrible that people talk that way. They do this because they know that it'll get, if they want to get on the news, I mean, look at.
Yeah, that's a good point. So he touched on the deep state, and I was looking for a good deep state clip. And it's right, and that's kind of one of the things I was referencing earlier. It's the deep state is really every government position or position of power that's not directly related to somebody who's elected to office, and that's pervasive. You know, and that goes, you know, to the city manager who essentially facilitates or plans for, you know, these big structures that are bonded, or to the generals in the military that, you know, coordinate military contracts, and even to the Federal Reserve where, you know, they facilitate monetary policy. And one of the things that I think Ron Paul has harped on is the fact that the Federal Reserve has unnatural control over the, you know, not only the U.S. monetary supply, but the world monetary supply. And until that big bank system control can be broken, which is what the Federal Reserve is essentially owned by private banks, right? And that's not even on public record as to, are you guys aware? I've looked into this and I've seen banks that it could be associated with, but not all banks that have a vested interest or ownership in the Federal Reserve. Have you guys seen anything to the contrary as far as knowing, you know, U.S. Bank has this percentage of control, Wells Fargo has this percentage of control, Goldman Sachs, et cetera?
I know what you're talking about, but I've never seen any hard evidence of it.
Yeah, until that's broken, until there's some type of system, if it's Bitcoin or if it's gold or if it's competing currency, you know, you see India and Iran and, you know, some African countries want to get away from the dollar or the petrodollar system, and there certainly seems to be repercussions for countries that try and do that, because the power structure in the United States wants to keep that. So they can monetize debt, you know, government debt, sell these bonds at very low rates that are actually below the rate of monetary expansion, and continue to fund the government, continue to build the shiny new buildings, buy the bullets, buy the guns, you know, buy off people. In my mind, until that can be combated, where, you know, it's a status quo, essentially, from what I've looked at. That's been my conclusion.
So what I'm seeing here at federalreserveeducation.org, there's approximately 38% of the 8,039 commercial banks in the United States are members.
Okay.
So that's a really big number.
Yep.
Yeah, but members and ownership are two different things, in my opinion. Because, I mean, who's, but, well, the real solution is just being self-sustaining,
right?
As well as possible.
The sovereign idea, right? Which,
well, I call it different, but
what do you call it?
I call it being king. Sovereign to yourself, yeah, would be another term, but, it definitely not a sovereign citizen, but just being a king in your own right, being sustainable. And I don't think you can ever be fully sovereign of yourself. And I think it's just a goal to attain, to shoot for. In a sense, in a way, it's almost like a religion. You know, we're all imperfect, and it's something to strive for. Is the way I look at it.
Looks like New York Fed reports that its eight largest member banks on June 30th, 1997 were Chase Manhattan, Citibank, Morgan Grant Trust Community, Fleet Bank, Bankers Trust, Bank of New York, Marine Midland Bank, and Summit Bank. And that was in 97.
Right. And a lot of those have changed names, merged,
well,
et cetera.
Let's look back at Creatures of Jekyll Island. How many people were there?
A handful, right?
There wasn't, I want to say, just a dozen.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly, but do you think the people, the insiders, ever relinquished the control to even their own bank? That their bank was just the entity, the mechanism. The true founders of the Fed, I believe, just would bring people in as need be basis. Maybe an owner, maybe, or a shareholder, maybe not. But it would just be a game played. It's all just control. the system and keep these people ahead of all the rest of us slaves. So,
and that's, I think that's really what paved the way for Ron Paul's career in general. He got just frustrated with being, with the dollar being taken off the gold standard and seeing how that power would shift to those people that you're referencing, those that nebulous group of people that essentially carte blanchely controls U.S. policy through monetary policy.
I personally, I don't think gold has anything to do with it, but.
Well, it's anything that kind of makes money sound or honest. Because right now you can, I don't think you'd argue, Kirk, that money is neither sound nor honest in the United States as far as how it's regulated or controlled.
Yeah, but
right?
it may never have been.
Sure. Yeah.
Even though it's, I mean, gold was just, I would say before the full technological revolution that we've had, I would say gold was the best intrinsic value of a worldwide that's uncommunicative.
Yeah,
but now that communication's worldwide, globally, I don't think we need something. I don't really think that money needs to be based on anything, really. But it's just as long as other people are willing to take it and deal with it, that's really all you need.
Right, right. But you
it's
need,
who controls it, though, is the problem.
Exactly. That's where I'm getting at. You got to have some mechanism that's honest and fair to all parties. Otherwise, it's just that slippery slope where you're going to have interested parties, if they have the ability and they're not altruistic or fair, they're going to try and utilize it to take control, right? And I think in the context of the United States, that's what we've seen. And right or wrong, you see China, Russia, Iran, African countries say, we're not going to take this anymore. We're going to try and set up a basket of currencies to counterbalance what the United States is doing. And that's where you start to see conflict. That's where you see war. When you have that tension back and forth, where there are countries and they're demonized by the political class in the United States as being evil or on the axis of evil or whatever. But there are certainly have been concerted efforts to try and get away from that. But that's a tough, I mean, it's a tough road to hoe. You essentially get killed when you try and do that. That's what I've seen.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why these countries end up getting more and more brutal, too, because they have spies and infiltrators that they have to deal with, people trying to undermine the leadership that is trying to fight this global banking system, stand in its way. But when you have people like the Project Veritas, when they're constantly implanting people all over, paying people to do stuff all over the world, create problems, create whatever public persona you need to gin up. You know, that's why Russia is blocking a lot of NGOs. Why, you know, all this stuff of we got. And then our media sits there and complains and acts like, you know, Russia's the big bad wolf in the area while we're sitting there poking them and doing everything we can to rile up us, you know, rile up a war. What do you guys think of going to war with Russia here? Or what, I guess, if we want to change the subject, but.
It's all part of the conversation, right?
Yeah, I mean, so, like, as far as that goes, I think.
Think it's BS?
Well, I don't think Russia, first of all, can afford to go to war.
Yeah, they don't have that much money.
Well, they might have to. It might be the only way they can put up a stand.
But they can't. I mean, they can't afford it. So,
well,
Putin said
how does where does Russia derive their economy from? If we're sitting there chopping off every leg in their economy, what point do they have to make a stand?
I mean, the CIA has to get their heroin from somewhere.
Well, to me, the whole thing in Syria is all about that, where Russia's main, a lot of their energy is an economy is based on that tentacle of Russia, and we're blocking it, and we're And Russia has, just like in Crimea, it was a given Crimea was needed to be in Russia control. And we tried to take it from them. And it's that, so that was a given, in my opinion. And it's a given also in Syria, what with these terrorists trying to overthrow Assad, and we're sitting there backing the terrorists, and Russia's trying to be like, well, aren't you guys have a war? Doesn't the U.S. have a war on terrorism? And trying to join the fight with the U.S. against the terrorists, and we're kind of not cooperating very well. It just shows that what the real interest is. And that's really goes down to the pipelines and the control of oil through who's going to control the flow of oil through Syria.
So this brings another interesting thing. See, this is going to be kind of, I mean, it's a sequitur, but it's kind of non sequitur at the same time. It's kind of dealing with the same conversation. We're talking about energy, right? So energy is what the wealth of nations is built on right now. And there's currently, you know, a moratorium on creating new nuclear reactors, that type of thing. There's the Lifter reactors that, I don't know, have you guys researched Lifter reactors at all? Do you know what I'm talking about when I say that?
I don't.
I haven't researched it, but I know you're talking about clean nuclear energy pretty much, where it's recyclable.
Well, it's liquid fluoride, so... LFTR, liquid fluoride thorium reactor, what it is. So it's thorium. Thorium's like a much more readily accessible radioactive component. They run these reactors on liquid sodium, basically, and the sodium's under low pressure. It's much safer. It's a self-contained type of nuclear power generation. And there's some talk and some misunderstanding, like, or just a lack of clarity on why these reactors haven't become prevalent, right? So we've got this situation where very cheaply we can get tons of this thorium that they could use to create all this energy. And this goes, so this is something else that I've been thinking about recently, where that energy could be used quite easily to convert the CO2 that's currently in seawater over to ethanol that could then be used to power vehicles and whatever else you want to, what have you. And pulling any CO2 out of the ocean, the seawater, is exactly a one-to-one removal of CO2 from the atmosphere, because the ocean currently acts as a sink. It. Exactly. So part of this whole, I'm looking at it from a long-term, big-picture perspective. So you get a cheap energy source through something like a thorium reactor running on an ocean front, pulling CO2 out of the ocean, creating ethanol to run farm equipment and those types of fuel, or those types of energy net gains that would be pulling CO2 out of the atmosphere, which would therefore reduce greenhouse gases if CO2 is the main contributor of global warming. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but here we have a perfect opportunity to create a sink to pull that out of the atmosphere, reverse whatever is happening, and then, you know, the system is sitting here being ignored. It's essentially like the energy is like, no, we're not going to deal with that right now. It's almost like they found a fantastic solution, and everybody said, just like when Tesla created his wireless energy transmission system, where Westinghouse said, well, I can't sell somebody just an antenna. Right now I'm selling the power cables, I'm selling the transformers, I'm selling everything that goes between the power center and the house. He's like, I can't just make it so somebody puts an antenna on a vehicle can suck power out of the air. So I feel like it's a similar situation where we're being limited on what power is available. And that's, you know, then limiting what we can do about full, you know, quote unquote global catastrophic warming and all that stuff too. Have you guys heard any of this stuff, or am I just totally coming out of left field on you?
Oh, I've certainly heard, you know, there are vested interests in keeping the energy system the way it is currently.
Exactly.
And, you know, that goes down to corporate profits and control, right?
Well, that is the main thing in my opinion, but I think a lot of it is just that's the way the system is right now. And to make those drastic changes, they don't know where the power shift could end up, who could end up being power brokers. Mm-hmm. And so to get rid of one power, so I mean, I'm talking power as in government
control.
Power.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Control. Yep.
Control, yeah. So it's those options, I think there's been numerous and there's always around. And I think that's why they just don't care. I mean, that's why global warming is all BS and everything. It's all just propaganda and hype just to enact new policy to gain more and more control.
Well, yeah, but, so I don't know that necessarily it's bullshit. That very well, there's an awful lot of scientists who say that that's legit stuff. So
thorium is legit, is that what you mean?
Just that the mean temperature is rising.
Oh,
and it's rising faster than it has, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that it's man caused or, and you know, I'm not a global warming denier or anything like that. I'm just not convinced that the science is as solid as everybody's making it out to be. And I can easily believe that it's getting warmer. I just don't know.
Yeah, it's been for thousands of years, right? Since the last ice age.
Yeah. Yeah. And from, you know, some of the research that I've done recently, research meaning just reading articles here and there, I've come to an understanding that the speed that things are warming right now is faster than they have ever before.
But one with a caveat, and I've thought about this too, because we've had, even in the last 1,000 years, 1,500 years, we've had ice ages. And even in the 70s, the concern wasn't warming in the late 70s.
It was cooling,
it was cooling because we were having temperature drops. So this stuff is cyclical, and we've had Maunder minimums and ice ages, which have been more closely associated with the sun's solar cycles than anything else. And we've had some strong solar cycles as of late. And this really isn't included in much quote unquote climate change conversation that I've seen that's in the mainstream media. I've seen it more, you know, like Science Daily or Scientific America, more, you know, physics science based publications where like, this is what we have. You can tack this to the amount of sunspots, which are very, very hot patches on the sun that you know, radiate a lot of energy out and are collected by the atmosphere and, you know, kept within the Earth. And from what I've seen from some predominant meteorologists and scientific magazines, our last solar cycle has come down, and there's a very, very good chance, well, you know, only time will tell, that we're now heading into a cooling phase in the next 5 to 10 years. So how is that going to be framed? Is this just temporary? You know, we're going to go back to it. But we've had, you know, I kind of look at this, we've had since the last ice age, which was, 10,000 plus years ago, we've had a steady net upward march. But we've had these little depressions in the 1600s. I think in the 1600s, it was like a 500-year, that wouldn't be right. It would be a 50-year depression, or a Maunder minimum was what it was called, where a lot of people died. Crops stopped growing, etc. So, and this has also been something that's been discussed in scientific circles, that net, it's more positive to have it warmer than colder. So
So if we could invent a warmer climate in the world, I think that would be a feat for humanity.
Dinosaurs lived when it was a heck of a lot warmer for hundreds of millions of years, and like where we're at in north was lush. We did not have extreme winters, you know, that type of thing. So a lot of, you know, I see with global climate, you know, I'm always skeptical of anything, but I see a lot of opportunism, because what do we see with Al Gore? He tried his CO2 carbon exchanges.
Well, so that's why I'm wondering, you know, is that why the things like the thorium reactor and the reclaiming the CO2 thing is being, you know, kind of fooied right now? Because that's still something that they want to use as like a globalist strategy for controlling redistribution of wealth.
I think there's a lot of that in things that make logical sense and that are denied. But the flip side, I'm kind of, and I've thought about this too, kind of as we see tech take a larger and larger hold, become, you know, these solutions are going to become cheaper and cheaper and safer and safer. We have a lot of smart people that are working on in this stuff, and there is a free market, and you know, it still exists. You can push it down, but we've seen things like Airbnb and Uber and, you know, various technologies that disrupt systems and get litigated to high hell, right? Like people don't like people hanging out in houses in their neighborhood for a couple of days and trashing things, or taxi drivers don't like, you know, this infringing on their business. I mean, that's a small micro example of what we're talking about. But these mm-hmm. disruptive technologies are still getting out there. So, you know, with some of this other stuff, when we're talking about energy or whatever, I'm pretty optimistic that even if, you know, this cabal that may or may not have a fine-grained control over the U.S. monetary system, the Euro monetary system, the, you know, Bank of England, et cetera, that with these new disruptive technologies that are more liberating and equalizing, what are they going to be able to do? It's going to be a wild card for them, and they're just not going to be able to control it. At least is something that, you know, when you look at it, you're like, well, that would be a good thing, and it's a potential thing that could happen.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I just hope that we end up not going to war with Russia over all this BS. So.
Well, I hope Russia holds strong. I think they're doing some good. I think they're doing good things. There shouldn't be war in Syria. There shouldn't be the meddling in the Middle East. And as much as they're kind of ostracized or shown as being an evil nation, I mean, when you get into politics at the top, they're all sociopaths in my mind. If it's Russia or if the United States, like even when Gary Johnson was asked that question that people gave him such a hard time for, or can you name a foreign leader that you respect? I mean, I thought about that. I honestly can't. And I know the foreign, you know, I know.
Well, that's why he blew the question. You would say he tried to answer it, though. Why even answer it? Say that's where you go into the libertarian mindset of, you know what? We're about liberty, not about rulers.
Yeah.
If there was a ruler out there in the country that was promoting independence, free market, then yeah, I would name them. But there are none.
Besides the Dalai Lama, who's like been ostracized out of his country, right? And has no, you know, essentially is a political leader of a
country. Did you say I didn't hear?
Besides, I mean, the one person I could think of was the Dalai Lama, who's essentially the spiritual political leader of Tibet. But China has basically pushed him out. He's got no control whatsoever, using peaceful, nonviolent political strategy. Any other country, you could argue that the leaders have got there through political violence, right? I mean, you could,
pretty much,
as a libertarian, you could certainly posit that argument.
Or yeah, and say, yeah, I don't believe in violence, so why would I believe in any good leader of any country? There's so many options you could answer that instead of try to answer the question.
Which you got slaughtered for, but.
Yeah, it's just so dumb. That's why he's just such a weak candidate. It's just ridiculous. And now he tries to cover himself and be like, oh, he doesn't know about any country or leaders or anything because of that Aleppo statement.
Sorry. Yeah, it is disappointing.
I had high hopes for him, too. You know, coming to the election, I had no idea he was this big of an idiot.
Well, he's just got no social skills. he comes off as a complete goof. I mean, he's a smart guy, but
I don't even think he's libertarian. I don't know any libertarians that would talk that like him.
Forced vaccinations, that type of thing, and as far as the whole cake deal where you should be able
one topic after another, one policy issue after another. He's on the status side. it's just it boggles the mind how he can. It's just such an opportunity waste.
Rand
talk
Paul
about Hillary wanting Trump.
Yeah, he should have gone libertarian.
Hillary would want freaking Johnson all the way.
Oh, absolutely. If Rand Paul wasn't such a, I mean, he's just playing the Republican game, but he would have done pretty darn well if he would have gone for a Libertarian Party nomination this time around. But that's, I don't think it was ever.
Well, they're
cards.
He's playing a game too, right?
Oh, he is.
So he's probably trying to say, you know, if Hillary's going to run, it'd be a hell of a hard battle. And I'm going to go after she's done 4 years of tearing things up. Mm. And then I'll run on that ticket. And that'll be my opportunity to jump in. I don't know. It's interesting. You look at the demographics, right, that are coming up. I was reading that the millennial generation is much less averse to communism than any other generation before it. So
the new generation's so clueless of anything is unbelievable.
I mean, they don't even understand
like
what's going on.
They have
back
no
in my
idea
day,
what
we
anything
didn't
is
believe
besides
in
status mentality.
I think that changes just over time. You have a natural predisposition, especially when a lot of kids come out of school and they're in that system. Public schools, public universities, or universities in general are very progressive or liberal. And as time goes on, you vote more. Hopefully that type of mentality fades. But it sounds like you guys It's going to just be
there. There's plenty of people that are seeing how the new generation is being brought up and how twisted their thought processes are that it's opening a lot of eyes to what the hell is going on with their system we've created.
So, Kirk, let me ask you something. Have you opened any of their eyes to the right way?
No. I'm still in process of writing my book.
Is it called The Hunger Games?
I don't know any. I just can't even relate. It's,
5 minutes.
It's kind of weird. I guess I haven't talked to many. But just when I hear certain, just how people talk, it's just, it doesn't really pay to even talk to them about it.
What do you hear? What's some anecdotal? Can you throw a few nuggets heard?
No, here's a good thing what I heard the other day. Oh, so I was having lunch in St. Paul, and all of a sudden you go to St. Paul and you do see a lot of Hillary Clinton yard signs.
Sure. I've seen some Trump lately, like over the last week. I'm like, where are these coming from? But I haven't seen any up until the last 7 days.
Well, like, yeah, all of a sudden Hillary Clinton signs are popping all over downtown areas. But so I'm having lunch at this little restaurant on the corner, and all these older ladies are in there. And, you know, I'm just overhearing conversations, and this one lady walks in like, oh, man, I love your Hillary Clinton bump, you know, little button you have there, and I need one of those. And it's just like, yeah, oh, great. And yada, yada, yada. But then all of a sudden there's two servers working, an older lady and a younger lady. And the younger lady, after they walk away, just goes, I overheard her go, yeah, of course you're going to go vote for Clinton, and then you're going to die here soon and leave the mess for all of us younger people. I just wanted to just stand up and clap for her. It made my day just to hear it. I didn't even say anything or anything. I just paid my tab and walked out, but it was like, oh. And then the older lady's like, yeah, you know what? I really think this country needs a businessman right now. And these were both women. Apparently, you know, most women want to vote for Trump, and I would have not guessed this at all. And
have you guys noticed that, like, a propensity for people to say they want to vote for Trump, but the media saying, hey, everybody's going to vote for Clinton, but most everybody who I talk to, they're all gung-ho for Trump.
Kirk's been on that train for months.
Months, this whole year. I called it before he was even the nominee.
But you, I mean, months. You've been saying that for quite a while since you're impassioned. The last time we talked about that is the fact that
I am
just
not
a gap.
For Trump by any means, but he is the prototype of American culture right now. I've said that forever, that he is the change candidate that what America is looking for. And I don't think it's going to matter, but he is far more the change candidate than Obama was. Obama was like the millennials change candidate. And then he didn't do jack squat, and that's what Bernie did. Because they're all so twisted to status mindset that they needed a Bernie as a Democrat. But they really, that's why I think the most damaging thing WikiLeaks has done is releasing, is showing how the DNC screwed over Bernie Sanders. And
what do you think about
think
the
that,
WikiLeaks?
That is going to drive the millennials away from the Democrat Party. And I think that's actually did more for hopefully the cause of liberty in the long run, that they're still going to be in the status mindset, but give it 10, 20 years, they will come around.
So what do you think about WikiLeaks? Are they truth tellers, or are they, I mean, you kind of hear both ways. Are they shills? What's your opinion? What's the collective opinion on those guys?
I mean, I think they're doing good things.
No agenda, no agenda whatsoever. Just to get the truth out there.
I don't think anybody has no agenda.
That's true.
Obviously, yeah. The timing of what they're releasing is pretty important to what they're doing right now, and
right.
They have an agenda that they want to push just like anybody else. But I also think that putting things like this out in the open, that's important. That's very important.
Yeah, it's. It seems to be the only thing that can lead to the skepticism, I think, that they get is that a lot of things they're putting out there seem to be Hillary-specific. Like, you don't see a lot of Trump-specific WikiLeaks stuff, right? Maybe just because there isn't a lot that's in the
political
sphere.
I think it's because I think there's a lot of institutions that were really actually fearful of Hillary Clinton. They just can't come out and say it.
But WikiLeaks
is different. That's why everyone's going to go in the box and vote for Trump, in my opinion. That's why I think it's going to be a landslide. Yeah. But they can't publicly say this, because if Hillary does win, they're screwed. And anyone that has a position that they can be screwed over by, you know, voicing their opinion against Clinton.
Got it. We got a minute. So last thoughts before we wrap it up at an hour sharp.
I think this war with Russia talk is bullshit.
I do too.
Yep.
But it really does actually worry me, because how Putin asked for the kids to all come home. The Russian generals, I mean, the military leaders say if Hillary's elected, we're going to war. It's to me, if that is the true messing with our election. Not, I don't believe Russia ever hacked the DNC or anything anyways, but
they may have done both, and have, you know, or it could be
a
special intelligence agency. My take is it's in all, there's just as good a chance it's an intelligence agency doing that and pushing it off as a Russian hack as anything else.
Well, you have to spoof yourself somehow. Why not spoof it through Russian servers?
Yep. Yeah, it's, and they're the boogeyman anyways, the most, you know, the most,
which is so stupid.
Yeah.
Well, and
it's so stupid.
It's
I hate that so much.
Too. Look at during Bill Clinton's time, every time there was a scandal come up, all of a sudden there's this new war that we have to do. And that's what
well,
I think Hillary,
typical politician thing at this point.
Yeah, that's,
well, I think that's why it's being ginned up as a war with Russia just to ignore WikiLeaks.
Yeah, I'd say kudos to Russia for putting their foot down, saying we're not going to allow this anymore. And that's
what I say. That's why I'm more for Russia than I am for Trump.
Well,
just because
we
making
need stabilization. And Putin, I saw a little clip where he's like, "We're militarily, we're much stronger than the United States realizes. We went down in the early 2000s. We've rebuilt our military." And he put it exactly that way. Actually, we've rebuilt our military industrial complex, and we can go toe to toe with the United States, and we're not going to take it anymore. You know, the Hillary moving forward and being very, very aggressive on the foreign policy front could instigate that. And I think
it can go toe to toe. Yeah.
Well, and if you look at Russia, they got to look at America and say, we're broke. Yeah. Russia's not in a good financial state either, but whoever would come out the winner would be pretty set.
Yeah.
U.S. has 17 aircraft carriers. The rest of the world has 22.
That goes to the U.S. side. Anyway, let's wrap it up. And I'll do that.
This has been Liberty Southwest podcast number 55. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Peace.
Adios, mofo.